where it's time to affirm, it seems to me, one of those great truths that people in Ukraine seem to embrace. I mention Ukraine, of course, because we are now having the wonderful gift to the American people of Jerry Nadler up there again during the Senate impeachment trial, and he promises to go into great detail about Ukrainian politics. But one thing he won't acknowledge is that Ukrainian politics has taken a very decided turn to the right. They have seen the way that socialism, the way that communism works. It doesn't work. It oppresses people. So the question is, why is it that we have socialist ideas that currently seem to be captivating so many of our young people? To talk about that and much more, a good friend of mine, Paul Kenger. And Paul is the author of all kinds of indispensable books, and a book on the faith of Ronald Reagan, which was groundbreaking. And a particular book recently about the great friendship that changed the world between President Reagan and Pope John Paul II. Paul Kenger is a professor of political science at Grove City College. He is the senior director and chief academic fellow for the Center Institute for Faith and Freedom. And Paul, great to speak to you, and congratulations on your column about the delusions of Bernie Sanders. It's called Bernie's Billionaires. We'll get to that. We'll get to that in a moment. First of all, I'm going to be joining you for this conference in April 2nd and 3rd, and the theme is about the spirit of democratic capitalism. Why is that about the most appropriate thing to focus on in the middle of a presidential campaign?
Well, thanks, Michael. It's good to be with you again. We always love having you out here in Grove City, Pennsylvania. Too bad you're not here right now. It's like 6 degrees. but I can promise it'll be a little warmer in April. So the conference this year, the topic is the spirit of democratic capitalism. And some of your listeners, knowing as I do that they are as well-informed as they are, they'll recognize that as the great title of a classic book by Michael Novak, same name, The Spirit of Democratic Capitalism. And we're doing this as an antidote, a counter to this spirit of democratic socialism that seems to be sweeping America. And rather than just beat up socialism and democratic socialism, which we're going to do and we're happy to do, but we thought we'd present the positive as well, democratic capitalism or free markets. And I think that needs to be done now when you look at the incredible success right now that quote-unquote democratic socialism is having. The group, the DSA, the Democratic Socialists of America, they now claim that they are, in fact, this is their website, I'm looking at it right now, quote, the Democratic Socialists of America, who we are and what we do, is the largest socialist organization in the United States. We believe that working people should run both the economy and society. By the way, Michael, as you know, that means the government should run the economy and society. Democratic socialists believe both the economy and society should be run democratically to meet public needs, to not make profits for a few, and to achieve a more just society. Many structures of our government and economy must be radically transformed. That's what they say. And they're now claiming 50,000 members, a presence with 217 chapters on campuses around the country. And their poster girl, aside from people like Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib, is, of course, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
And this just came down the pike yesterday. It's a soundbite that is just astonishing from AOC. And I want to say, and I want to get to, she, of course, has endorsed Bernie Sanders for president. She's out campaigning for him. Yeah, and you have a new piece, which we're going to post to our website, Bernie's Billionaires. And it's about the only billionaires that Bernie Sanders seems to like and what they have in common. We will get to that in just a moment. But first of all, this exchange with AOC and Ta-Nehisi Coates, best-selling author, they were doing an event called MLK Now for the MLK holiday on Monday. And just 2 days ago, Ta-Nehisi Coates asked her about the challenge to her ideology that said that if people make money making widgets, they basically have a right to keep it. And you know what? Congresswoman Cortez doesn't think so. Listen.
I'm Joe Billionaire. I made widgets. I sold those widgets. I made billions of dollars, you know, selling those widgets, making those widgets. Therefore, those billions of dollars are mine. Why am I the enemy of healthcare?
Well, you didn't make those widgets, did you? Because you employed thousands of people and paid them less than a living wage to make those widgets for you. You didn't make those widgets. You sat on a couch while thousands of people were paid modern-day slave wages, and in some cases, real modern-day slavery, depending on where you are in terms of food production. You made that money off the backs of undocumented people. You made that money off of the backs of black and brown people being paid off a living wage, under a living wage. You made that money off of the backs of single mothers. And all of these people who are literally dying because they can't afford to live. And so no one ever makes $1 billion. You take $1 billion.
And big, big cheers. Your reaction, Professor Paul Kangor.
It's absolutely amazing. It's really sickening. I mean, this is classic socialist and, you know, unfortunately, far left Democrat class envy. And I didn't hear this anywhere but on your show, Michael. I this is the first time I've heard this. I Googled it while I was listening. She said, "Well, you didn't make those widgets, did you?" Well.
This is like Obama saying you didn't build that, except it's much, much worse because she doesn't say, she says you didn't make the widgets, you take the widgets. As a Ta-Nehisi, oh, it's so profound. The point is...
Well, you sat on the couch, she said, right?
Well, what I resent most. And again, we know each other. I think of my late father, who at the end of his life, when he was living in Israel, was a small businessman, and it basically started a hybrid optoelectronics company. And at no point in his life did my father sit on his couch. Oh. Anybody who's running a business, especially, by the way, a big business, is sitting on a hot seat literally 20 hours a day.
And yeah, in fact, here in Grove City, a good friend of mine named Fred Maxwell, who owns some garages, he died. He died on Christmas Eve at the age of 72. I learned from his wife a couple weeks ago. I was shocked. And he worked himself to death. Small business owners, large business owners, they're not sitting on their butts. And also, she said here, you made that money off the backs of undocumented people. Really? What about what about the guy who started Caterpillar in Peoria? I doubt that's true. You made that money off the backs of black and brown people. Is that true of every millionaire? Look at the assumptions that are going on here. You made that money off the backs of single mothers. Do you think that was true of Vanderbilt and Carnegie? They probably didn't have a single mom working for them. The attacks. This is aggressive. It's malicious. It is. It's really quite sickening. And then to have all these young, you know, dopes and dupes cheering that, many of them who are probably at really expensive universities getting their tuitions paid for by parents who've made money off of this system, it's really quite appalling. Shame on her.
Oh, shame on her indeed, and shame on the whole Bernie movement. I mean, Bernie Sanders, and you cite him in your piece, Bernie's Billionaires, thinks that billionaires shouldn't exist. And then you make a point that, hold on for a moment. With all of this talk about you didn't make these widgets, you didn't make this money, you took it, you stole it. What about Bernie? He has a net worth of about $2 million. You go into the piece about some of his vacation homes, his special getaways, his high living, and the millions and millions of dollars that that he has raised for his campaign and he spends to support a lifestyle that's pretty gracious. Where would Bernie say that he made any widgets at all? How has he deserved all this money?
Well, that's right. In fact, Bernie acknowledged to the New York Times that he's now a millionaire. And Politico last year called him a, quote, three-home-owning millionaire with a net worth of approaching at least $2 million. And you know, and you and I, we don't have a problem with that, right?
No.
But of course, with the way he talks, the class envy that he foments, I mean, he has three homes. He and his wife, Jane, bought with cash $575,000 a summer home in the Champlain Islands. That's, you know, that's where they summer together. In addition to that, they have a $400,000. They paid $400,000 in 2009 for a colonial home in Burlington, Vermont, which, if you look it up online now, is now worth about $500,000-$600,000. And they also paid $500,000 for a row house in Washington, D.C.
Okay, so that's three homes at least.
Three homes. They have at least three homes. And here he is. He's saying billionaires should not exist. He says, you know, not a single billionaire has donated to our campaign. And everybody cheers. I point out in this article, Bernie's billionaires at the American Spectator, that one of the people that Bernie admired and talked about what a great job this leader did was Fidel Castro. And Fidel Castro said, we have no reason to create millionaires. We fight not to create millionaires. And in fact, Castro, and this was in 2006, Forbes magazine estimated that Castro wasn't a mere millionaire, but was worth $900 million in rising. And in fact, by the time he died, this would have been, I think, about 10 years later, Castro was easily a billionaire.
And what kind of widgets did he make? I mean, this is why I think that
right.
At least I give Ta-Nehisi Coates some credit for asking her the question about somebody who actually makes widgets. The point is, what does Bernie Sanders do for his money? I mean, I understand he gives lectures and he even had a recording album where he's singing labor songs, left-wing songs. And no, he
this
does.
This lad is your lad.
Yes, exactly. And Bernie Sanders, what has he ever done in his entire career where you could say he's actually helped working people?
Yeah, and the only thing that I could honestly say that he's done for that money, I think some of it was book royalties, right?
Yep.
Some of it might have been speaking. Some of it was probably salary for whatever it was he paid. His wife, Jane.
Yeah, but he gets a salary for being in the U.S. Senate, where I don't think he's ever had a successful piece of legislation.
Well, and he also gets through his Senate salary and also through nonstop campaigning for about 5 years now, at least, going back to 2015. All of that is all expenses paid as well.
And by the way, he just announced he is chartering a private jet to campaign in Iowa during impeachment. Now, I don't know how he's going to do that since they're running till 2 a.m, but we'll see.
Yeah, I wonder if it's new Green Deal approved, right? Green New Deal approved. Yeah, and that's another thing, too, with AOC and her rules on banning airplanes and banning air travel and so forth. Anybody who thinks that would mean that someone like AOC wouldn't get on an airplane or that she was going to take Amtrak from New York to L.A. or that she'd be out there laying track across the Pacific Ocean, right, in order to, I don't know how you're going to do travel from continent to continent. I mean, you got to have rocks in your head if you don't think she's going to exempt herself.
And again, you bring up this example of Fidel Castro, and you can talk about all of these Marxist dictators and socialists around the world. They all are kleptocrats. I mean, the late Hugo Chavez, Yasser Arafat, a prominent socialist revolutionary, was worth an estimated $3 billion when he died, presiding over some very poor people in Gaza, at least, and the rest of the Palestinian territories. Look, the question that I would have for you is, you teach this stuff, you write about it. I mean, one of your very entertaining books and important books called Dupes is about how the left has fooled people over the years. How do you, at Grove City College, which is such a wonderful institution, I'm going to be enjoying broadcasting from there again in April, how do you deal with it when you occasionally have some snowflakes and some Bernie bros who stumble into your classroom?
Well, my students here, fortunately, they generally seem to know better. But I just had a student who came back from traveling abroad, and he was in my office on Monday. We just started classes again for the spring semester. And he told me how genuinely horrified he was at running into students from other colleges who he told me, he said, you know, they honestly don't seem to really think this stuff through. When you talk to them and they call themselves a socialist, and then they answer a survey saying that they prefer socialism on their iPhone and tell you that they want to have their own business someday, they don't even get it. They don't put one and one together. They genuinely don't know any better. And you know, these people that protest the one percenters in America, the Occupy Wall Street crowd, right? If you want to see one percenters, go to a communist country. Go to a place like Castro's Cuba. Go to the West Bank. Go to the Gaza Strip.
Well, how about San Francisco, California?
Yeah.
Which is, again, most liberal city government, most liberal state government, you could say, in the union. And there's tremendous extremes of wealth in San Francisco. Paul Kenger's piece, Bernie's Billionaires, the subtitle is Fidel was one of his models. You have there a quote I'd never seen before of Bernie Sanders praising the late Fidel Castro for educating kids, for totally transforming society, for giving kids health care. Does he still believe that stuff?
He probably does. And you and I, Michael, both, we've run into this so many times from the left. In fact, when I do my Cuba lectures in my comparative politics class at Grove City College, I always tell the students, I say, no matter what you learn in this class, you're going to get to Washington, D.C. to intern or wherever, and you're going to run into somebody on the metro, and you might talk about Castro's Cuba. And if you do, one of the first things that they're going to say to you is, well, at least they have free education and health care, right? And it never fails. They say that again and again and again. Well, guess what? In America, we have quote-unquote free education and public schools. Of course, not really free. You pay for it with your tax dollars. The Western European countries, they have quote-unquote free health care, and they do it without having communist totalitarian societies.
Yeah, and without forcing, what is it, a fourth of the population to flee in desperation, which is actually changed America for the better with the advent of a very strong Republican Party and a very strong Cuban-American community in South Florida. Paul Kenger, I look forward to seeing you. I look forward to talking to you again soon on the air. People should find out about the Institute for Faith and Freedom. It's posted on our website at michaelmedved.com, and the conference on the spirit of democratic capitalism that we're going to be participating in. I'm going to be broadcasting from there and speaking for that conference. You'll also have plenty of opportunities to hear and meet with Dr. Paul Kenger. His work and information about it posted at michaelmedved.com. Meanwhile, Bernie Sanders just ripped, and in harsher terms than Paul and I just did, by, well, it's a Democrat, very prominent Democrat. We'll tell you which one coming up.
So here's the deal.
Michael Medved.
Here's the deal.
On the Michael Medved Show, there's yet another poll showing a Bernie Sanders surge. There's also a very different poll, a Monmouth University poll, that shows a very big Michael Bloomberg surge, shows Mayor Bloomberg surging into fourth place, passing, according to that poll from Monmouth College, it's Joe Biden in a comfortable lead, followed by Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, and then Mike Bloomberg at 9%, right behind Elizabeth Warren, and surging. So I'm sure Bernie doesn't like that because Mike Bloomberg really is a billionaire. But he became a billionaire and made his money by starting a business and making jobs for people and employing people and selling people a product that they want and that they like and that they buy. Bernie Sanders, well, okay, here's another poll, a new CNN poll, headline from Politico, Sanders surges, a new nationwide CNN poll. The poll found 27% of registered Democrats or Democrat-leaning independents said that they would support Sanders, the open socialist. Bernie Sanders' standing among voters nationwide surged, and showing the Vermont senator has now joined Joe Biden at the top of the Democratic presidential field. Among Democrats or Democratic-leaning independents who registered to vote, 27%, this is nationwide, said they would support Sanders for the Democratic nomination, compared with Biden polling at 24%. The difference between the two candidates falls within the margin of error, so there's no clear leader in the poll, they say. But this is the very first time that there's been a CNN poll where Joe Biden hasn't been the clear leader. Could this be why Hillary Clinton just spoke out against Bernie Sanders? And by the way, she spoke out about Bernie Sanders when she's promoting a new March 6th Hulu release. It's called Hillary. It's a new documentary about the former First Lady, Senator, and Secretary of State. And in it, she says some things about Sanders, and they've released some of these excerpts to The Hollywood Reporter. So this is in The Hollywood Reporter. It's stuff that Hillary said on record. She said it to a camera, and it's part of this new film. And she said this. He was in Congress for years. He had one senator support him. Nobody likes him. Nobody wants to work with him. He got nothing done. He was a career politician. It's all just baloney. And I feel so bad that people got sucked into it. Tell us how you really feel, Hillary. By the way, this is very useful, and it's important that she's saying this, actually. And good for her. She went on to explain that she not only has a problem with Sanders, she has a big problem with the people around him. Now listen to this. And again, this is not Liz Cheney saying it. It's Hillary Clinton. She says, I will say, however, that it's not only him, meaning Bernie, she doesn't want to say his name, but it's the culture around him. It's his leadership team. It's his prominent supporters. It's his online Bernie bros and their relentless attacks on lots of his competitors, particularly the women. And I really hope people are paying attention to that, because it should be worrisome that he has permitted this culture, not only permitted, he seems to be really very much supporting it. And I don't think we want to go down that road again, where you campaign by insult and attack, and maybe you try to get some distance from it. But either you don't know what your campaign and your supporters are doing, or you're just giving them a wink and you want them to go after Kamala or Elizabeth. That means Kamala Harris or Elizabeth Warren. I think that's a pattern that people should take into account when they make their decisions. This is, by the way, this is from a this new documentary about Hulu that actually spends a lot of time, apparently, talking about the one experience that did more than any other to build Hillary's national image and popularity. Listen.
You know, you get scarred up a little bit.
It wasn't like I thought, how can I think about the most stupid thing I could possibly do and do it?
I didn't want anything to do with him. Chelsea put herself between us and held both our hands.
As long as she has been in public light, there have been these ups and downs. You know, be our champion, go away.
You want to make a difference, you want to have an impact. Well, then you got to get in the arena.
And she is getting in the arena again. I mean, there are a number of people who are at least expressing the opinion that this convention, this Democratic struggle for the nomination, with Bloomberg surging and having the real possibility of winning a bunch of delegates on Super Tuesday, with Bernie certainly having enough money. He's raised more money than anyone else in the campaign. He has more money in this campaign than anyone except Bloomberg. But Bloomberg actually is not taking contributions. He doesn't need to. He's going to spend $1 billion, he says, to defeat Trump. The truth of the matter is there are so many of these Democrats who have enough money to make a serious run. Pete Buttigieg has raised a tremendous amount of money. And so you've got Buttigieg and Bernie and Elizabeth Warren and Bloomberg. Tom Steyer could hang around and win some delegates. He was running second recently in South Carolina, Tom Steyer. So is it possible that at the Democratic convention, when this thing is locked up, and maybe you have Joe Biden leading the pack with 35 or 40% of the delegates, but you need 50% plus one to win the nomination, that the entire thing is deadlocked on the first ballot, and then after the first ballot, they have 700 superdelegates who have the chance to vote. They don't vote on the first ballot. And those superdelegates start a stampede toward Hillary Clinton. I think it's highly unlikely. But look, there are lots of things that happen in American politics that are highly unlikely. I'll tell you one thing I can speak about with absolute certainty. Tulsi Gabbard isn't going to win her suit against Hillary Clinton. Democratic presidential candidate Tulsi Gabbard filed a defamation lawsuit today against Hillary Clinton. She is seeking $50 million in damages, claiming the former Democratic presidential nominee carelessly and recklessly impugned her reputation when she suggested in October that one of the 2020 Democratic candidates is the favorite of the Russians. And she never mentioned, by the way, Tulsi Gabbard's name. And they asked the Clinton Team Clinton what they thought of that. They said if the Matryoshka doll fits, wear it. That's if the nesting doll fits. Okay. I know a little bit about defamation law. This is a nuisance lawsuit and it's an attempt to get publicity. She probably won't even pay to file it, would be my guess. It's just publicity. There's more on AOC's lunacy, real lunacy, and hating this country coming up.
A corrupt human tornado.
Michael Medved.
On the Michael Medved show, we were talking before with Paul Kengor from Grove City College in Grove City, Pennsylvania, about the tendency of the left to enshrine and embrace and idolize and often follow billionaires that they like, who often base their billionaire status on confiscating money that belongs to other people. But the whole idea that, generally people who actually earn their money by creating companies and making jobs and making stuff that people like to buy, like, you can say all sorts of things about Henry Ford. Really, you can. Yes, he was an anti-Semite. Yes, he had very bigoted ideas about various races, multiple races. Yes, apparently he was a fairly difficult guy. But he created a great company. And he changed the world in a positive way. And he made, literally, ultimately, the progress that he made in developing the automobile helped people enjoy thousands upon thousands of jobs all around the world. Yeah, so this is exactly the same kind of success that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is enjoying, right? I mean, because she has created so much wealth. How exactly? I think even that documentary they made about her has kind of flopped, about fighting the house or burning down the house, I think it's called. She certainly has gotten lots and lots of social media followers. And on the event called MLK Now, she was together on stage with best-selling author Ta-Nehisi Coates. That's Ta-Nehisi Coates. Should get that right. Yes. And he's just so impressed with everything she says that he often gives that lovely reaction. Yeah, And here she is with her message to billionaires.
If Jeff Bezos...
He doesn't have to be Amazon.
If Jeff Bezos wants to be a good person, he'd turn Amazon to a worker cooperative.
Right, right.
You know, like, not what do I do with all of this money that I have created with this unjust system.
Right.
And if, usually if you're a billionaire, that means that you control a massive system. It means that you own oil supplies. It means that you control textiles. It means that you have a massive labor force under your control. And to be ethical, if you're a billionaire today, the thing that you need to do is give up control and power. So I don't want your money as much as we want your power. The people, not me.
She was right the first time. She wants the power. And what does it mean for the people to take the power of Jeff Bezos, really? And to turn Amazon into a workers' cooperative? You know, look, I know Amazon is a wonderful punching bag. I actually am kind of amazed by Amazon. And yeah, I buy stuff from there. And they deliver it on time. They get things straight. If they make a mistake, they correct it. I've actually had that experience. And we know some people who work for Amazon, not many. And I understand it's a very competitive environment, but would you, listening out there, consider taking a job at a company like that? A lot of people do and do very well with it. And the company continues to grow because regardless of what you're looking for, the chances are it can help you find it. And the whole idea that Amazon is somehow exploitative, and this is one of the things that struck me about what AOC was saying. She's saying that Jeff Bezos and other billionaires make their money on the backs of illegal immigrants. Okay, does she want to cut off America from undocumented immigrants? No, she wants more. She really does. She basically wants to open up the border. And by the way, Bernie Sanders recently said that Trump just completed his 100th mile of wall. Now, no, he hasn't quite gotten all 1,800 miles built, but there is a full 100 miles where he has replaced falling down and in bad repair barriers with barriers that are more effective and newer. And again, he's been able to do it. Now, Bernie wants to tear all this down. So, in other words, she is blaming people who actually give jobs to the undocumented? By the way, I'm one of those people who thinks you'll never reform this immigration system in a meaningful way, which we need to do, unless you make it illegal with consequences for companies that knowingly hire people without proper immigration status. But that also means you have to make it a little bit more rational and sensible and accessible for people to get proper immigration status. President Trump was reflecting very briefly about the impeachment, what he calls the impeachment hoax. A hoax is something that doesn't exist. I think what he's really saying is that the idea that there was some kind of Ukrainian conspiracy to pervert our election, that that's a hoax. And he was in Davos at the World Economic Forum, where he gave a pretty strong speech about the United States and how well we're doing. Did President Trump exaggerate the level of success and wealth and everything else in the U.S.? He did. But have we had a remarkable economic run over the last 3 years? Yeah, we have. Here he was speaking about his former national security advisor, John Bolton.
The problem with John is that it's a national security problem. You know, you can't have somebody who's at national security. And if you think about it, John, he knows some of my thoughts. He knows what I think about leaders. What happens if he reveals what I think about a certain leader and it's not very positive, and then I have to deal on behalf of the country? It's going to be very hard. It's going to make the job very hard. He knows other things. And I don't know if we left on the best of terms. I would say probably not, you know. And so you don't like people testifying when they didn't leave on good terms, and that was due to me, not due to him. And so we'll see what happens. But when you have a national security, you could call it presidential prerogative. You could just call it, the way I look at it, I call it national security for national security reasons. Executive privilege, they say. So that would, John would certainly fit into that. When you're a national security advisor, like this gentleman is doing a fantastic job, Robert, I just think it's very hard. And I've always gotten along. I've actually gotten along with John Bolton. He didn't get along with other people, a lot of other people. But when he knows my thoughts on certain people and other governments, and we're talking about massive trade deals and war and peace and all these different things that we talk about, that's really a very important national security problem, I think, having somebody.
Okay, this is not an unreasonable position. I do suspect that they're going to at least agree later in the proceeding. This is what Senator Collins has talked about. And there are a number of Republican senators. Later in the proceedings, after the Democrats finally wind up, there's Jason Crow is speaking right now. When they finally wind up making their pitch for impeachment, and then the president's team has their response, after that, they may have yet another debate about whether to have witnesses, and we may get a few. But stay tuned. We will get to that. There's also something that in that little soundbite President Trump did that I've never, ever heard him do before, ever. And it's very encouraging, actually. We will get to that and the impeachment hearings in the TV ratings for this trial. How they doing? We'll tell you in this greatest nation on God's green earth.